I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Yeah, I actually don't remember those months when, like, the invasion started in February 22 and we started to write in June 22. So those 4 months, I don't quite remember what I was doing because I was doing nothing, just scrolling the news all the time, probably, and, like, surviving for Ivan, doing some stuff for Ivan. And I was so devastated and empty that... yeah, it was a very hard time that really made us apart with Matthew. I think mentally we were so far away from each other that eventually when Matthew proposed me just to write it all out for my own purposes, not as a play even, I agreed because I didn't know what to do else. I had no like decision. What shall I do next? How am I going to work? Shall I work in a theater anymore? It was a big crisis for me.
This is Play Me, your digital theater. We transform the hottest contemporary plays into bingeable audio dramas. I'm Laura Mullen.
And I'm Chris Tolley. Welcome to Play Me, the podcast where we turn acclaimed stage plays into captivating audio fiction. In today's episode, we talk to Matthew McKenzie and Maria Khomatova, the writers and performers from the real-life love story, First Matey Man of Odessa, available on Play Me. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Chris. So I know you and I always enjoy talking with playwrights whose work we feature on the program, but I think it's fair to say that we were extra eager to sit down with Matt and Maria to learn more about their fateful meeting in Ukraine and their whirlwind romance just before the pandemic and Russian invasion. I feel like we really got to know them through experiencing this play, and I feel very invested in learning more about them as a couple, learning about their extended family, and what life is like now for people still living in Ukraine.
Yes, they give us this rare and profound glimpse inside Ukraine before the invasion and some of the aftermath, which helps tell the human side of what's happening there. Maria and Matt are just as charming as they appear in the roles of themselves on stage. And talking to them is just so interesting because, well, they're still in their story. This isn't just recounting the past. They are in the midst of it. And it feels very vulnerable for them just to share with us what they've been experiencing together. Maria Khomatova is a performer who graduated from the Kyiv National Theatre University in 2012 and has worked in two repertory theatres there. She received a Golden Duke Award from the Odessa Film Festival for Best Actress in Two of Us.
Matthew McKenzie is a citizen of the Métis Nation of Alberta and the artistic director of Punctuate Theatre. His play bears Wondora Awards for Outstanding New Play and Production. In 2023, Matt and Maria Wondora Awards for Outstanding New Play and Outstanding Production for their show, First Matey Man of Odessa. We chatted with them at CBC in Toronto about their journey, adapting their romance for the stage, navigating long-distance love, and the therapeutic power of writing about their experiences. Maria and Matt, you tell this beautiful real-life love story about how you met in Ukraine just before the pandemic and the Russian invasion. But I'd love to know a little bit about your lives before that fateful meeting. Can you tell me, Maria, a little bit about what your life was like before Matt entered the picture?
It was full of art, full of theater. Now it's so pleasant to actually recall about that because happy times, they are different right now. Yeah, I used to work in a theater after I graduated the theater university in Kyiv. I studied in Kyiv, and then I was invited to work in a repertoire theater. So the theater system in Ukraine is a bit different. If you're invited to work in a theater, you kind of have a guaranteed work. You work as a hired actor, you have a salary, and then you can have a, like an increasing of your salary, all this kind of stuff. So I was happy to work there. And then I changed to another theater, which was quite experimental, more contemporary drama, also with classical plays based on Russian literature mostly, which is interesting because Ukraine is such a mixed country with Russian culture and Ukrainian as well. I would say that Russian literature was more presented in a theater than Ukrainian one. So yeah, that was my life. I also had shootings in films and TV. I lived by myself. I was hanging out with friends. I had many friends in Kyiv and Odessa. That was my life. A real, bohemian, bohemian life before I met Matthew. Yeah.
And Matt, how about you? What was your life like before you met?
I'd say it was pretty transient. I would never be in the same place for more than 6 weeks, it seemed. And so between Alberta and Toronto and, yeah, just making a life as an independent artist with not a lot of outside or other responsibility. So I could kind of move around the country at the drop of a hat. And yeah, just making art wherever I could make it.
And so then you met in 2018 during a theater workshop that you were working on in Kyiv?
That's right. I'm also a dramaturge as well as a playwright, and I was working with our director of First Métis Man of Odessa on a play of hers called Barvinuk, and we hired English-speaking Ukrainian actors, or they were in fact hired for us. So we showed up and the actors were already hired, and this is where I met Masha, and we struck up a friendship and got to know each other in Kyiv and then continued a correspondence. And then I think about a year later, I worked up the nerve to see if she might be interested in something beyond friendship. So
I'll just note for listeners that Masha is a nickname for Maria. So Masha and Maria are the same person. Matt, I had read that you went to Ukraine to do some research for a play that involved some documentary theater. And I just thought, wow, that's a far way to go for some research. What compelled you to travel to Ukraine?
Liana is a Ukrainian-Canadian, and she's quite tied into what's been happening politically in Ukraine. And so she was writing very passionately about the similarities between what her grandmother went through in the Second World War and what folks at that time in Eastern Ukraine were going through dealing with the Russian-backed separatists. And we felt strongly, I think I was the one who proposed after a few drinks one night that we had to go to Ukraine for Liana to finish the play. And Liana is a heat-seeking missile, so she said okay, and she went, and she secured us all the funding to go. And next thing you know, we're in Ukraine, and we were actually in Avdiivka on the front that recently fell in Ukraine, and we interviewed folks who were still living there. It was already a place that had been heavily fortified, but also heavily bombed, you know, chunks missing out of apartment buildings, places throughout Ukraine that have been hit in that way. But yeah, it was very eye-opening. We could hear the booms of the artillery and the mortars in the not-so-distant distance. And then we came back with those first-person accounts. People initially were very apprehensive to speak to us. There's total distrust of media on either side, and they did not want to be the pawns in some propaganda game. And Liana would whip out her giant artist journal and start taking notes longhand, and you could see the recognition on people's faces that, oh, this is not a reporter, this is an artist. And so yeah, that's how we were able to get many, many wonderful people to speak with us when pretty much across the board they were not into it initially.
And I guess when you were there and doing that work, you had no idea that the story of what was going on in Ukraine at that time would ultimately become your story in a way, and that there was going to be a lot more of a development that was going to impact your life in a way that I'm sure you could never have
imagined. Never have imagined. You know, yeah, we were speaking with Ukrainian veterans and soldiers, and they were adamant that Russia was not done, that they were going to launch a full-scale invasion. But when you spoke with, I guess, more the general population of Ukraine and the artists and whatnot that we worked with, and I would include Masha Maria in this, there was not this feeling that Ukraine was under imminent threat. So not a lot of people that we encountered really believed that Russia would go to the lengths that they have gone to and commit the horrors that they've committed.
Yeah, even being a person who lived in Ukraine, a Ukrainian citizen, I didn't pay attention on that warnings. I was I was sort of living in my own bubble, theater bubble, full of beautiful things, and I didn't want to pay attention. I was kind of blind and out of politics, which I regret right now, but that was my life. And when Matthew and Leanne and Patrick came to Canada, I'm sorry, to Ukraine, they were much more informated and educated than me. So they shared many information that I didn't know or didn't want to know, because the war in the east of Ukraine was kind of far from center and from Odessa, the south of Ukraine. And my life was very separated from that. So when they came, I was so impressed that they know about that more than me, and that they won't want to erase sort of knowledge.
Were you impressed or were you suspicious that we had the Western savior complex?
That's true. Yeah, I was impressed, but I was hiding that. And under this distrust, sort of mistrust, I was thinking, what kind of profit will they have of that? They probably want a profit. They probably want to have some sort of acknowledgement of their work. But no, they were just digging as artists and trying to make a play as real as possible. That's why it was a documentary theater, which I was also not a fan of. I was raised in a classical theater. It's a different kind of performing and different kind of approaching the material. And they, like, rose interest in me. I was through like mistrust and all these kind of things. I was opening more and more to them. And that's how my interest to Matthew also was awakened, I think.
Well, I'd love to hear about, you know, obviously we hear in the play about your romance. But I wonder if you can, outside of the play, just talk a little bit about when you first met and what your perceptions were of one another. And did you know, you know, it seemed like it was a year maybe before you confessed your feelings, but did you know? Were you feeling them secretly?
Yeah, I was connected with Matthew from the first day when we started rehearsals, because he was not like usual artists behave. He was a very concentrated, silent, attentive person who was sitting and just observing the process. And that was impressive, because artists, you know, can be very extravagant, very expressive, all this kind of stuff. And sometimes I'm getting tired of that. And Matthew was not like this. And that drew my attention to him. But I'm not sure. Yeah, I wasn't sure if he felt the same, because he was, again, silent and remote a little bit. But he was inviting me on all their gatherings, and I felt included, but not more. So I was sure, actually, when we said goodbye to each other, that that's forever, and all this acquaintance is just like a business acquaintance, all this kind of stuff, and then we'll never meet again.
Yeah, I think that I was in a relationship back in Canada when we met.
Plot twist.
Yeah, and we did speak about that in early drafts of our play, but it just felt like to speak to that was sort of not about our story. And so that relationship ended, and several months later, that's where I sort of, Masha and I formed a friendship, and it was clear that we had both, in very different ways, me to like indie theater and Masha to classical theater, had completely devoted our lives to theater. And so we say the bohemian life, but what we've really done is sacrificed everything in pursuit of this goal on different sides of the world. So I think that that was really the foundation and the curiosity in our relationship, our friendship, before things developed romantically. And I know that someone on, I think it was a friend of Masha's on Facebook, Masha sort of wrote down details of our romance. And a woman wrote, she said, wait, you never even kissed when you met? And then you flew to Canada? And Maria's like, yes.
Yeah, that's true. We were very like friends, really like friends before we met in Canada. So when I flew to Canada a year later in 2019, we were just friends and colleagues. I saw him And yeah, I didn't know how it will evolve, how it will be developed. Maybe nothing will work out of that, I was thinking when I came to Canada.
Mm-hmm. And even when Masha came to Canada, we were clear that we didn't know whether things mm-hmm. would spark. And so we agreed that would be a friend coming to visit a friend. And then, you know, things did, did spark.
Yes.
Yeah. things did spark. And so, yeah, things sparked and rapidly developed.
So was it that year of getting to know each other by correspondence that really cemented the relationship?
Yeah, I think that that is what made the rapid development of things. I mean, we were always catching up to a degree. It feels like we're still catching up. But I think that we'd actually, on a friendship level and a correspondence level, gotten to know each other very, very well. But that felt old-timey in a way, like a, you know, a pen pal or something. So there's those exchanges, and obviously there's been many surprises, but it did seem through that correspondence that we sort of saw two very different people, but whose values and the things that we were passionate about were very aligned.
One of the things that I loved in the play is your descriptions of each other that were sort of a little bit brutally honest at the beginning, in that, Matthew, you say that you were scared of Maria, and Maria says that, you know, it took you X number of years to write your first play. That is one of the things that is just so great about this play, is that it's honest and candid. And it also, I was thinking, you know, great romantic stories have clashes between the protagonists. They don't start off always only seeing the good side. That's what I think makes it so cathartic, is to see people with different opinions come together. It's hard to be in a new relationship with someone, particularly under these circumstances. Talk a little bit about getting to know each other, given that you are essentially strangers and that you are from different countries, different cultures.
Well, different mentalities can, yeah, challenge a lot of things. And the language border that sometimes appear between us still appears, because my English is a second language and it takes me a lot of time sometimes to find the right word to express what I feel or what I want to say. And that can be challenging sometimes. And yeah, in small and big things, like how people talk when they meet with friends, it's different. And what are you talking when you meet with friends in Ukraine and Canada is different. I don't know. I think it's a work every day, when you, especially when you are taking this challenge and decide to live together and get married. You're working every day. It's a marathon, and overcoming something every day. So it's not easy. No, it's not. But because, again, we have two things that really join us. We have Ivan, the son, and we have a theater where we meet. And I don't feel these differences on a territory of theater so much as I do in real life, which is interesting, because there are many, many things in common when we do theater and create together, and many things that can be different in real life. But I'm okay to deal with them as far as I have theater. Yeah, we're just very lucky that we're from the same area of, like, specialization is the mm-hmm. same. I think that what saves us and saved our marriage in difficult times. Ivan too, because when you have a baby, you can't just give up and suddenly get divorced, I think. You have to overcome many things inside of yourself. And the same with the theater. We're so lucky that it joins us. That's mm-hmm. how it helps, yeah.
Yeah, I think that that alignment of values and interests, we're very fortunate, but we still, you know, had to get to know each other, because we'd only been dating in person for 5 weeks before we learned with the COVID pandemic that we were expecting. And there was 4 months more correspondence before we were reunited and got married. So when Masha was going for her PR card, they said, you need to provide your
certificates.
No, your correspondence.
Yep.
And so we were like, oh, okay. We had to heavily redact some stuff, but but yeah, we had a monster correspondence, and it also really reinforced for me, even though things were going so quickly at that point, that, oh no, we've been in communication a great deal and spoken a lot about life and what we want from life. But yeah, things could have gone the other way. I mean, we could have Masha could have come to Canada and learned things about me, or I could have learned things about Masha, and things could have gone in a very different direction. So in many ways, I think it's incredibly fortunate that we are so well matched.
What strikes me about your story is that it is so hard when you first have a new relationship. They're fragile. And when you first get married, and even more so when you first have a child, and you had a surprise of getting pregnant and having a baby on top of being separated by COVID. And yet, you know, like, it would be understandable if it didn't work out, because those are a lot of pressures. Talk about bringing your son into the world and how that's been for you.
Well, I think that I never thought I'd have a son who was fluent in Russian. So that's quite something to not necessarily be able to understand the conversations that are happening in the home all the time. But yeah, I think that it's a cliche. Men say it all the time, that when they see their wives give birth and that whole process, that it's the most incredible thing. But it truly was. And the fact that we had come to Canada when Masha was 6 months pregnant, and that she didn't have healthcare, and they couldn't get us the healthcare until days before she went into labor. It just, everything was just so kind of pressure cooked. And so that time after Ivan was born, it was, you know, a deep COVID. People were so isolated. But for our little family, it's this very special little nesting period where things suddenly were not as wild as they had been. And so in our show, there's a year that we just sort of describe in two sentences, because I guess you could say, dramatically speaking, not a lot occurred there. But from a family standpoint, from a nesting standpoint, that was incredibly important and special in this tiny little apartment in Edmonton.
Yeah, I remember we had to deal with so many papers when we were in Odessa and got married. And we had to confirm that Ukrainian marriage certificate is valid in Canada and make so many stamps. And then I was just dealing with this bureaucracy for so long that I kind of forgot that I was pregnant. In a way, I had a very light pregnancy. And then when we arrived to Canada, we had to deal with bureaucracy again. And so this sacred moment of being pregnant and having a child was sometimes even like away from me and from my perception. And then only when like the last month came, and when I got the healthcare, I kind of understood, okay, now it's time to really think, how am I going to do that? And it was very great. I mean, my father is a doctor, and he was really happy that I will have a baby in Canada, because he was sure that the level of medicine in Canada is higher than in Ukraine, which I agree. I had amazing doctors in Edmonton who helped me with the difficult labor. And then, yes, this year of being together with Matt and Ivan, which is a rare year, because my mom came in 2 years and lived with us. So we had this 1 year precious time being together in Edmonton. I still recall this time as a wonderful time, although nothing really happened because of COVID, but we were together, just us. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's remarkable, because I just remember when I had my daughter, I was like, oh, I see now. On top of everything else, it's just like you're tired and your life is so upside down. And I just, when I was going through your play, I was like, that's amazing that you got through that, because for you, your family initially wasn't with you and you have been through so much. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to hear that you had a good year despite the sleep issues that you outline in the play.
Yeah.
Matthew's family was amazing. They helped me so much and supported me in Edmonton. And that's why I didn't have this postpartum. And I also remember that it was easy to actually sleep in there, because you're like on your nerves, as you say, and tiredness all the time. But if you have this support, you can avoid this. So I'm just using the moment to say how grateful I am to my mother-in-law and father-in-law. They really supported me then in Edmonton.
Yeah, and my siblings, because, yeah, no, they were huge for us. Great, wonderful community. And then my theater community in Edmonton as well. So, yeah.
It sounds like there was a little bit of concern at first when you got together because of the distance, when you said, hey, guess what? I'm getting married. We're having a baby. We just met. Your family came around. Both of your families were so accepting of a situation that, you know, could seem a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what the reaction was?
I think for sure that as artists, we can sometimes be carried away by our passions. And sometimes artists find themselves in relationships that might not make sense on paper. And I know I'd been in relationships that were curious. So I can't speak for Masha, but I think that... But there's also the stereotype that people from certain parts of the world will want to marry Canadians in order to get the passport, and then the marriage is not a legitimate one. And it is quite interesting how many people would make sort of side comments about something like that. And I'm thinking, wow, that is one heck of a strong stereotype that people will share it so freely to my face. But yeah, I think that I felt so... I obviously had a lot of learning to do about Masha, and we didn't know necessarily how our lives were going to be once we had our baby. Also, that's just the plight of artists. Like, when you get pregnant, you're like, how are we going to do this? But I'd gotten to know Masha on such a level that I really felt that I understood her on a fairly deeper level. And I knew that on the values level, I know what my parents' values are, and I knew that they would love Masha. And so it honestly didn't take long for them to be like, oh, wow, Matt kind of like fell into this fantastic relationship. So on my end, it was initial panic followed by a lot of happiness.
I have to say that Ukrainians also have stereotypes about Canadians. And my parents were also worried that if I marry a Canadian guy, for example, he might use me as a housewife and not give me any freedom, and I will just have to be, yeah. For example, that's just one of the things that Ukrainian women are afraid of when they meet foreigners.
Yeah?
Yeah, or abandon, exactly. To use a woman and then abandon her, that's also one of the stereotypes. So I was also facing many questions when I was dealing with foreigner. But again, because we are theater artists and we love theater, we could go further of that stereotypes, I think. It helped us. And also, Matthew was a playwright. Playwrights in Ukraine are like the, how to say, they don't earn a lot.
Lowest of the low.
Yeah, they're even lower than actors, really. So I was not, if I wanted to get married to a successful Canadian, that wouldn't be a playwright. So there were other reasons to do that.
Masha still says to people, Matthew is a director, because that has status. But, and I do direct, but I'm more a playwright. So.
I thought the moment in the play when Maria's father sends you the Leonard Cohen song was the most romantic and Canadian thing possible. Is that true that Leonard Cohen is very popular in Ukraine?
He is popular. He is popular in Ukraine, in Odessa, because he is Jewish, and Odessa has such a strong connection with Jewish artists and culture. I know many people who really love Leonard Cohen. In Kyiv as well, in Odessa too. So, yeah. And I didn't know that my dad loves him so much, because it was such a surprise for me that he sent you this link of the song.
It was wild, because as I was pining for Masha and wondering how we could make this impossible long-distance relationship work, I was listening to that very song frequently. And so then out of the blue to have Eugene send me the link to the song, I was like, wow. Looking for signs, that definitely felt like one.
I'm Laura Mullen speaking with playwrights Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homotova about their show, First Matey Man of Odessa. We'll be right back.
I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of 6 darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. You understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's funny talking to you because I feel like I know you, although I've only met you a couple of times now, and I feel like I was at your wedding and that I know your son and that I've had a chance to travel to Odessa. And that's because you chose to share this very intimate love story, about your romance and the difficulties that you faced in the form of a play. I know that it started as a radio play with Factory Theater before the invasion of Ukraine. And I just wonder, what made you want to share this story with the world in this way?
Yeah, well, when we worked on the radio play, I was happy with it, but I thought, I mean, I certainly would like to put it on stage. And we didn't necessarily know whether we had the content, enough of content to make a whole play, because the radio play, I think, was like 20 minutes. But then, of course, Russia launched the full-scale invasion. And I certainly wasn't thinking about the play at that time. But a few months later, after my mother-in-law, Olga, had come to stay with us, and after it was clear that Russia was not doing this briefly, that they were in it for the long haul, then I was having trouble making sense of it all. And that, for writing for me, is a way I try to make sense of the world. And so that was a tool I'd used in the past and was using again. There was a real distance with Masha and I. I mean, I was trying to understand and relate to what she was going through, seeing all these places that she knew being bombed, people who she knew fleeing their all their lives just turned upside down. And eventually I started to talk to Masha about how important it could be for us to write together. But Masha had never written anything, and so this was not something that she was necessarily gung-ho about, originally.
Yeah, I actually don't remember those months when, like, the invasion started in February 22 and we started to write in June 22. So those 4 months, I don't quite remember what I was doing, because I was doing nothing, just scrolling the news all the time, probably, and like surviving for Ivan, doing some stuff for Ivan. And I was so devastated and empty that, yeah, it was a very hard time that really made us apart with Matthew. I think mentally we were so far away from each other that eventually when Matthew proposed me just to write it all out for my own purposes, not as a play even, I agreed. Because I didn't know what to do else. I had no, like, decision. What shall I do next? How am I going to work? Shall I work in a theater anymore? It was a big crisis for me. So I started to write it out just on, like, my notebook to share it with myself as a diary. And then Matthew asked me to, okay, show me what you have written. Just share some thoughts, what you can share. And I shared, and I think you kind of slowly started proposing to do it as a sort of a structure of a play, not immediately. So it passed, like, again, a couple of months before he came to me with this proposition. And that's how it all started.
Yeah, I think that we speak about it in the play, but that we were, I think Masha was the main person, and I echoed it, that we didn't want to appropriate what was going on for Ukrainians in Ukraine at that time. And so, but as we focused more and more on our story and the effects of it on us here, it felt like a very Canadian story, because so many Canadians are from elsewhere or are married to someone from elsewhere. And so many people are following things in a very detailed way and all over the world. And so to show our lives contending with this major world event on the other side of the world, that seems to really resonate with people. You know, there's that, it's a cliche, like, you never know what people are carrying, be kind with people, but because you don't know what they're carrying. But that really now resonates with me, because you really don't. And I think that Masha was, you know, I'm not an actor, getting up on stage is a big step for me, but Masha writing, never having really written before, and then on top of that, writing stuff that is so personal is another huge thing. So, you know, there's a number of, not lines, but entire exchanges in the play or things that Masha shares, which she wrote in one sitting, and we never really changed much. So I had to constantly rewrite what I was working on, but Masha would sit down, write something out, and then go for a latte. So she was an incredible writer.
And I also was raised, as I said, in a different theater culture. We were not trained to write plays. We were not trained to perform in documentary plays. It's different style of acting and doing this. And I was so anxious that I am actually going to do the things that I was not approved of. I wouldn't be approved of in my like theater studies and in Ukraine. Anyway, it was a huge leap of unknownness, and I just did it. And I thought, what am I actually doing? It's such a huge risk. It's my own life. I'm just saying everything that I'm going through out of people's eyes on in person to the audience. It's a huge risk and it's very scary. I was very frightened, but again, because I didn't know what to do else, I had no other material that I wanted to work on. I didn't know, yeah, what shall I do? That was my only thing that I worked on. This play was the only solution that I had, both in, like in mental health and like in theater work as well later. And it helped me to survive, I'm sure, because if I didn't have this play, I would go crazy or I would fall in depression or something bad would happen, I'm sure. So it saved me. Theater saved me. Matthew's proposition saved me.
It was quite remarkable from a relationship standpoint, because again, it could have gone a different way and been a great mm-hmm. source of conflict. But instead, it allowed us, especially when we're talking about how we were feeling and thinking pre-invasion and then going through the time after the invasion, we were hearing how the other person was thinking or feeling at that time, because you don't always share your internal monologue with your partner. And that was very interesting for us. So I think it allowed us to communicate in a different way that a couple of theater nerds could communicate. So we're fortunate in that regard.
I remember when Matthew shared his like last two monologues of the play, I was so impressed that he's actually also going through a lot of painful stuff that he's not sharing with me because he doesn't want to add more pressure on me. But when I met his pain on the territory of theater, I turned to him because I was so into my own, you know, problems. I thought that no one can understand me. And then I thought, oh my God, he's also actually going through the same stuff as I do. And it was, yeah, it was a revelation. And yeah, that's how it worked.
In your play, there's a lovely question exploring whether telling real stories about real people is that art, because that's not the culture that you were raised in as a theater artist. And I'm wondering, now that you have done this play and performed it many times, is it art for you? How do you feel about it in terms of an artist?
Well, I'm convinced now that it's art because of other artists that I've seen in Canadian theater. And people are doing so amazing variety of work in Canada based on their personal stories and their experiences that now I'm convinced that, yes, it can be a piece of art. Because the more you see talented people doing theater, the more you are inspired to do the same, right? Honestly, I'm still not convinced whether my story is a piece of art, but I'm not worried about that anymore. I just had to do something for Ukraine, for my own health, and to do something for Ukrainians who live in Canada right now, for them also to see that they're not alone, that they're not the only one who go through that hard stuff. Me too, although I'm not a refugee, I'm an immigrant, new Canadian who lives here. Anyway, I had so much more goals to achieve, except for just telling my own story, that I could manage it. But still, I'm not sure whether I will do it one more time in my life, whether I will do another play, for example, based on some other experience or problems that I'm going through. I'm not sure.
It illustrates the human side of what's going on in Ukraine in a way that news coverage and statistics and data just can't. I mean, when you portray Odessa and the theater and dancing by the Black Sea, and then you again go and revisit that in the play and say, now it's that beach has got mines, now there's tanks and sandbags. That image is so powerful because we can understand, oh, that could be where I live, my hometown, what that must feel like. What do you think, Matt? I know that you obviously already were interested in and worked in this kind of material. How do you feel about it as a piece of art?
Well, I think that on a documentary theater level, I do have issue with that form sometimes. It does feel exploitative. But I think seeing shows like Brimful of Ash by Ravi Jain and his mom, and, you know, My Ex-Boyfriend's Yard Sale by Haley McGee, I think, had a big effect on Masha. That these shows are, they are true, but they are also works of fiction too. And so those are inspirational in a big way. And I think that this show makes people enjoy the show. People are with us in the show. People are with us when they'd realize I'm really not an actor up there. They really lean in. They're like, they're with me. And people really talk after the show. And I think that that's something that if we can achieve with theater, if people are actually engaged in conversation after and thinking about the story that was just told, that something has occurred there. I don't know if that's art, but something has occurred there that that's important for me and that we've been very fortunate to be a part of. Every show we did it in Toronto at the theater center afterward. I mean, we also offered a lot of free food, but folks stuck around after and we were speaking for an hour or longer with folks from all over about their experiences. People want to share what they're going through as well, which we really, really appreciate.
One aspect of the show that I just absolutely loved is the portrayal of your mom, the mother-in-law, because even though most of us have not gone through anything like what you have gone through, we relate to you because we have had mother-in-laws or family members that are not our own. I was just looking at the play again today and the scene where you're sleep training your son, I think you're away, and she's whispering through the crack in the door, but Putin was sleep trained and that's why he's the way he is and what a consequence of bad parenting if you're not doing it right. I just wanted to know, like, what does your mom think of the play?
She was great. She has a great sense of humor. She responded to that very well. And I was nervous. I thought, oh my God, what if she will be offended or hurt? What if she will see this like monstrous character and she will like take it too close to her heart? She didn't. She said, okay, that's a character on stage. That's not me. If people are laughing, I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
if
she said, oh, those aren't actually Masha and Matt up on stage. Matt is not that charming. and she also is hilarious because at one point I talk about considering lacing her banana bread with sedative.
Yes.
And she said, you should have gone darker. You should have said poison. So she's been a great sport and she's seen the show, I think, in five of the cities.
Yeah, all our national tour. First of all, she's a great support. She goes with us on all the national tour, helps with Ivan. And we, as much as we can, help her to see the show in those different venues.
Mm-hmm.
And all the time, she's just as impressed as she was in the first time.
She's a remarkable woman.
The play works on a number of levels, but one thing that just really works is the humor. It's so funny in this under circumstances that in theory shouldn't be funny. And I was thinking it sort of has that kind of a Albert Brooks deadpan kind of approach. I think we talked before when we recorded the play, this feels like a movie. Do you envision other steps? Because in many ways, this story, unfortunately, because I think we just entered into the third year since Russia invaded Ukraine, so the story's not over. But do you see a future for this beyond this play?
That's Matt's contribution, first of all, I want to say about the humor. He has a bald sense of humor.
And what sense of humor?
Bald.
Bald sense of humor.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard that term.
Can I
say it? Is it because I'm bald?
No, because it's very like honest and open, can I say it?
Okay, sure.
Not like hiding sarcastic kind of self. Though some sarcastic sometimes too, but yeah, it's just all the funny things that people laugh at, that's a contribution of Matt. First and second, yes, we are going to work on a screenplay of First Meaty Man of Odessa. And I think this year, 2024, will be dedicated to that.
I want to ask you about the title of the play, First Meaty Man of Odessa. Can you unpack what that title means to you?
Sure. I think people often think that the First Meaty Man of Odessa is me. But then our director beautifully has us holding pinkies with Ivan and imagined Ivan, our son, at the end of the play. And then Masha says, First Meaty Man of Odessa. And then there's recognition from the audience. And always lovely to hear those little exclamations when they realize that the First Meaty Man of Odessa is our son, Ivan. It's been incredible to share this story with Ukrainians and Indigenous folks. The first place we read the play was in Smoky Lake, Alberta, and I believe the audience was almost entirely Métis folks and Ukrainian folks. And we've met many folks across the country in the various cities we've been in who are happy to say that they're Ukrainian and Métis. Yeah, because there's been a lot of cooperation between the two communities and obviously some relationships in the past, not just us. And I think that not just with Métis folks, but Indigenous folks in general who've seen the show, what Ukraine's going through really resonates with them. That attack on, obviously, on the physical self, but also the attack on culture, on language, that everything that is the Russians regard everything that is Ukrainian as backward or inferior. And so the Indigenous folks can draw very obvious correlations to the genocide that's occurred in Canada, and the fact that now, as you know, as Indigenous theater artists really working to reclaim our own stories, tell our own stories, not have them told for us. And the fact that that is occurring in Ukraine too, where the vast majority of theater before the full-scale invasion was performed in Russian, because this was considered the height of culture. And now there's been a complete shift where we went from a playwright was quoted as saying 99% of theater in Ukraine was Russian, and now none of it is, pretty much. And that's extraordinary. And I think that wouldn't that be a great example for Canada, that we put more focus on our stories and quit pouring resources and energy and time into the stories of our colonizers. I think that's inspiring for me and for Indigenous folks who've got the show.
We've been in Winnipeg and we were so impressed that people after the show came and said, do you know how huge the community of Ukrainians is here? The community of those who are connected with Métis as well, Ukrainian Métis mm-hmm. couples. You're not the first, you're just a continuation of them. It's mm-hmm. so wonderful. Winnipeg was special.
In Winnipeg, the president of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress came to me after the show and said the first group that reached out to them after the full-scale invasion was the Red River Métis mm-hmm. With a $100,000 donation, because wow. they recognized what was happening. They could relate. So,
and what's it been like to merge your two very rich cultures together?
Well, initially, I wanted to structure this play as a message to Ivan, a sort of like a letter to Ivan, and explaining there in this letter what it's like to be a man of those two cultures, Ukrainian and Indigenous, what it's like to be a man of Odessa, what are Odessans like? And there are many similarities as I try to explore that with Indigenous folks, because this proudness of their identity, this proudness of uniqueness of their culture, and emphasizing that the culture is not dependent on imperialistic point of view. It's our own thing. That's very much about Odessa and how they behave, Odessans, how they behave in big companies, how they like to sing and dance and all this kind of stuff. This folk element of the culture in Odessa and in Ukraine is very, very strong, as much as an Indigenous. Not saying about the embroidery. Embroideries, Matthew once said that it's almost similar. Indigenous embroidery can echo so much with Ukrainian ones.
Yeah, there's some traditional belts, Ukrainian belts that look very similar to Métis sash, which is, mm-hmm. They had them on display actually at Persephone Theater in Saskatoon. But I think that in the play, there's talk of us being reunited and we're birds in a poem, but we're very keen to be talking about the land, be talking about the water, and to use the Ukrainian words and in our play, the Cree words for these places, and to sort of take them back in that regard. And that feels very directed at Ivan, that he is of both places.
Maria, what do you want us to know about Ukraine and what's going on there? How is your family and your friends that are there now? What is the situation like?
Well, first of all, I want to say that the war continues and it becomes harder and harder from day to day. It doesn't stop and it doesn't seem that it's going to stop, because Putin is going probably to occupy the whole eastern part and southern part of Ukraine, and he's moving forward to Odessa. Now the Odessa is being bombed almost every night. The recent events that happened They happened on my street where my apartment is situated, where Matthew lived. Anyway, it continues just with civilian areas and he's not going to stop.
Yeah, on Friday, we thought that our apartment building had actually been hit because we couldn't reach Masha's friend who stays in the flats. And then the next day we learned that it was about a block away and 12 people were killed, 5 children, some right around Ivan's age. So it's horrifying that it's continuing and that Putin hasn't been made to pay a bigger price for this just outright imperialism.
And if even, I know that many Westerners are waiting when Ukraine will sort of write the peaceful, how to say this in English, act with Russia to stop these actions. But even if Ukraine, let's imagine this crazy situation, will do that, it doesn't guarantee that Russia won't go further because Putin is a liar. He is lying and he will not follow the word and the signs that he's doing. So anyway, this situation seems like unstoppable. And what's the solution here? We don't know. It's just important for people who don't live in Ukraine and are not Ukrainians to understand that Ukraine is just not fighting for their territory. Mm-hmm. They're fighting for defending of European Union first and then further mm-hmm. the Western part of the world.
When we went and when I first met Masha, we were talking to the veterans and the soldiers who were fighting in the East, and it felt like they were trying to convince the rest of Ukraine that Russia was coming, and most Ukrainians did not want to believe this, that Russia would do that. And now it feels all of Ukraine is trying to convince the rest of the free world that this is a big problem for all of us. So it's something that when we say that those soldiers are friends who are on the front lines, they're not just fighting for Ukraine, they're fighting for us here in Canada as well. I deeply believe that.
Do you feel like the world is paying attention enough? I mean, it seems like there's always another situation unfolding in another place in the world. Obviously, other wars have started. Do you feel like we're paying attention like we should be?
No, I don't think so. I think that, again, as you said correctly, the world has turned their faces to other sides of the world, which is also full of horrible stuff. But it doesn't mean that we should turn away from Ukraine. Ukraine is still on the same level of fight as it used to be. So what can you do, for example, is to donate, I don't know, to find someone from Ukraine to help them, refugees, anything, any help that you can still continue to do would be amazingly helpful. Yeah, I think that especially in a theater when no Ukrainian play is presented, it's a big problem. We should do more Ukrainian plays and do more, I don't know, Ukrainian events or something. It's not enough attention to Ukrainian, to war in Ukraine right now.
Yeah, I think we're passionate about sharing this story still because we feel that on a storytelling level that Russia's winning, that people are starting to convince themselves that there's nothing we can do, that we should just let Russia take what it wants to take and then we'll all have peace and we can all move on with our lives. But
it's a big illusion.
Yeah, what recent history has already shown us is that if we sue for a false peace now, that will lead to much worse problems down the road. And I mean, I for one would, Canada's done incredible things. Canadians have done incredible things to support Ukrainians without question. But we need to seize the narrative back from the propagandists and the Russo-fascists because the suffering is only increasing in Ukraine.
Is your father still there?
Yeah, he's in Odessa with his wife and we are making all the steps to make him a visa right now and he will probably come to visit us in Canada. But he doesn't want to move in Canada like on constant level. He just wants to visit us. He wants to be in Odessa. As crazy as it sounds, he doesn't want to live
Odessa.
He's
an Odessa man, yeah.
Your play ends on a very hopeful note that one day you'll return to Odessa and bring your son. Are you hopeful? Do you still have hope that that ending in your play can be a reality one day?
Yeah, that's the, oh my God, I will start crying right now. I don't want that. That's the dream that I have and I still dream about that at night. And of course, that's the whole thing that keeps us on board and keeps us doing that. Yeah, this hope is alive and it will be until the war is over and Ukraine will win.
We can't wait to return and to hear Ivan speaking with little kids in Odessa. It will be an incredible thing. And for him to walk down the beach on the Black Sea with his grandpa will be an incredible thing. That's for sure.
I think that's a lovely image to end on. I just want to thank you so much. I really enjoyed this play, and I look forward to seeing how your story continues, how the story of this play, film, putting it out there into the world, and what happens with your home country, with your family. And I hope that you are all reunited soon and that you have that happy ending that you illustrate in the play.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
That was Maria Homotova and Matthew McKenzie talking about their show, First Matey Man of Odessa, based on their real-life story, which is available on Play Me. If you'd like to hear more plays inspired by real-life experiences, we recommend Karen Hines' dark comedy, Crawl Space, about her nightmarish experience with home ownership. And we're returned next with Paolo Santalucia's bold family drama, Prodigal. The play follows the return home of Edmund Clark, the gay, alcoholic eldest son of a prominent Toronto family, after he's cut off from the family trust. We'd love to know what you think about Play Me. You can connect with us by emailing playme@cbc.ca. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Play Me wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing, you can listen to all our past shows and you won't miss a single one of our new episodes. And while you're there, we would love it if you would consider rating and reviewing us. It helps spread the word about our podcast, bringing theater to a whole new audience. Play Me is produced by Laura Mullen and Chris Tolley in partnership with CBC Podcasts. Our associate producer is Brianne Tice. A special thanks to our CBC team. Anna Achete is our digital producer, and our executive producer is Cecil Fernandez.
The director of CBC Podcasts is Arif Narani, and the executive director is Leslie Merklinger.
Play Me is funded by the Canada Council for the Arts and the Ontario Arts Council. Play Me is an Expect Theatre production. For more information about our plays, please visit playmepodcast.com.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.